This is ESPN Radio.
Danny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And man, Chris, we thought yesterday was a heavy dose of news. We had so much going on around the NFL with Aaron Rodgers, Odell Beckham Jr. being excused from practice, excused again today. We've got Thursday night football coming up, but that all now pales in comparison to what has broken in the NBA at this point during the day.
No question about it. I mean, it feels like we're at that point where if there's something going on in the news cycle, all you have to do if you're going through a crisis is duck your head, because you're going to get something the next 24 hours that's going to overshadow what it is that you're going through. But you're right, man. The stories that came out in the NFL on Wednesday pale in comparison to what the NBA is dealing with right now, and we got to go out to the desert and discuss what's happening with the Phoenix Suns organization.
Yeah, so Baxter Holmes, ESPN reporter, interviewed more than 70 former and current Phoenix Suns employees throughout the 17-year tenure of owner Robert Sarver here. Phoenix Suns owner Robert Sarver is accused of overseeing an organization that many employees described as toxic and sometimes hostile, a report from Baxter Holmes reveals. The interview with those employees who have been a part of the team throughout that tenure, according to the report, accused Sarver of using racially insensitive and lewd language repeatedly in the office and displayed conduct towards employees that recount as inappropriate and misogynistic. Multiple current and former employees also told ESPN about conduct by other members of the Suns leadership team that they felt contributed to the work environment. While none said Sarver was involved in those incidents, many feel that Sarver's own conduct contributed to a culture that affected how some of the other managers in the organization treated their employees. And Chris, I think the saddest part, the saddest part is what these people are accusing Sarver of having to have dealt with during their time as employees here. But how sad that as we sit here and tried to read and digest all of this reporting by Baxter Holmes, my first thought was, this sounds familiar. Like, man, it feels like we've done this before here, and it feels like these are allegations and the kinds of behavior that we have seen from other organizations and from other powerful owners in sports using that power on the people that they work over.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because the NBA seemed like they were on the forefront in terms of trying to change the culture and the dynamic when it came to owners and how they relate to their employees and players, right? They switched the name from owners to the Board of Governors just so it didn't feel like there was an overseer mentality, or that the owners actually owned people and that they were governing the franchises within the NBA. So it's sad that we're still in this place in 2021 where some of these comments are still continuing to come up, some of these accusations. And the thing that I go back to within the article that I'm reading is just the acknowledgement from Robert Sarver that he actually used the N-word when he was trying to correct a player. And it just seems like that's something that you don't do. If it's a word that you don't want in your vocabulary, if it's a word that you don't use, then why even repeat it? Even if you're trying to correct a player, that's the part that doesn't make sense to me. That's the part that doesn't pass the smell test to me. And if you'll use that word once, you'll use it again. So I'm looking at Robert Sarver with a side eye, and it feels like this is a classic they said, he said situation, and it's going to make it hard to get to the bottom of it because it doesn't necessarily feel like there's going to be evidence, a smoking gun of sorts. But the reality is it's a whole lot of people that are making these accusations about Robert Sarver on, you know, the racially insensitive front as well as the misogynistic attitude front. And I don't know how this has a place in today's NBA, especially when we're hyper-focused on trying to clean up workplace environments to make sure that everybody feels included and everybody feels accepted and that it's not toxic.
Candy and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call online. Be a part of Candy and Golic Jr. Nation. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's heating up. The fans are hyped. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Chris, a couple of things stuck out to me here. A couple of quotes that I think really sum up this entire situation here. Said one former Suns basketball executive, "There's literally nothing you could tell me about him," meaning Robert Sarver, from a misogynistic or race standpoint that would surprise me. So that's one thing. And then you have this. Former employees told ESPN that in some cases, employees lied on team-administered surveys about working for the team because they feared retaliation or felt the exercise was pointless. Multiple staffers said they would not go to HR with complaints because they feared retaliation. Quote, "That is standard in our company," said a current business employee. "If something happens, you don't go to HR." Like, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about that workplace environment and what these people have been dealing with here, then I don't know what will.
Yeah, and the sad part about it is that you have another co-owner express those same sentiments when it came to Robert Sarver's behavior and how he treated employees, and saying that it's embarrassing to be associated with somebody that is leading the organization just because of the way that he behaves. So, I mean, when you've got so many people that are, you know, accusing one individual of all of these things, it makes it hard to believe that there's no truth or no merit to the comments that they're making and the accusations about his behavior. So it's really a sad state of affairs when we talk about the Phoenix Suns organization. And I don't know exactly how the NBA gets to the bottom of this, but one thing is clear: there needs to be a full-fledged investigation into the behavior of owner Robert Sarver in order to clarify all of this, because I'm going to need a whole lot more than statements from his legal team trying to address each and every one of these accusations, because it doesn't pass the smell test with me. It doesn't fly. I think there needs to be a thorough investigation led by the NBA, and maybe rope in the NBPA, get them involved in this, Michelle Roberts, Chris Paul, and others, in order to figure out exactly what's going on with this organization, not only as it relates to how the owner interacts with the players, but how the owner interacts with front office personnel and team employees, because I think that's what gets to the heart of the matter.
And at the heart of the matter is also the time period, a period of 17 years of his tenure, Robert Sarver at the helm of this team. And Baxter Holmes, the ESPN senior NBA writer who authored this report, joined Bart and Hahn earlier today on ESPN Radio and said that this has gone on far too long.
One thing I would note is staffers there described seeing investigations play out in Dallas and with the Clippers and feeling that, particularly over a 17-year period, why has nothing been done here? Not necessarily just laying that at the feet of the NBA, but why has no one done anything and more or less left us on an island and allowed aspects of this culture and of this workplace to persist? So there's a, again, the timeline is something, you know, for as many questions as I asked for that the story, that is probably the key question that so many people ask me, is how come nothing has ever been done? Mm-hmm. How come no one's ever been held to account?
And that is going to be one of the questions that we ask Brian Windhorst, our ESPN NBA insider, who's going to join us here in about 30 seconds on this show to try and figure out how this persisted for so long and what happens next, to Chris's point, with the NBA and a potential investigation. We'll get to all of that after this word from AT&T. Now, if there are friends and family members you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we are joined now by ESPN NBA insider Brian Windhorst on the Goodyear Hotline. And Brian, I want to start there. We just played a cut from Baxter Holmes, who authored this report on Robert Sarver, the Suns owner, and talked about employees on the inside expressing a sentiment of disbelief and wondering why it took so long for this to come out. And so, based on what you've heard and seen around this, why do you think that this was something that was able to persist for so long?
I mean, as this is, you know, what happens in organizations, especially when it involves the person at the top. I mean, we see it in all walks of life. You know, Robert Sarver has not had a good reputation within the NBA for other reasons than was in this story for a while. And, you know, at this moment in time, you know, when the Suns learned the story was coming out and they put out those very aggressive denial statements, it was about 2 weeks ago, tomorrow. You know, I was with the team for 5 days as this story was, you know, being handled and being published. And I have to say that the players on the roster were bracing themselves for the worst. And it caused a lot of stress. They were talking about it every day. They were talking about it internally, about how they were going to handle this. You know, this has already had an effect on the psyche of the organization, the players themselves. What happens upstairs, sometimes it's obviously the way your business operation goes defines in a lot of ways the culture of your company. But sometimes the players are removed from that. You know, they're down, they live in a different bubble. This situation has already affected them because they've been on edge waiting for this now for almost 2 weeks.
Wendy, two members of the Suns that fans and media would undoubtedly want to hear from, Monty Williams, the head coach, and Chris Paul, who we know is a key figure when it comes to the NBPA. When do we expect to hear from them, and what do you anticipate them saying regarding this particular issue?
Well, so they were supposed to be available to the media this morning. They're playing the Houston Rockets tonight here in Phoenix. They canceled their media availability this morning, which is not that surprising. They needed, in addition to preparing for this game, they need to, you know, basically read what it was and take it in. So Monty Williams is expected to speak before tonight's game against the Rockets, around 8:15 or 8:30 Eastern time. And, you know, the thing that Monty says will carry a lot of weight in setting the tone, because unlike James Jones, the general manager, unlike a couple of the other players who spoke on this after the statements came out, Monty withheld comment. He did not offer any sort of support like James Jones did. He wanted to wait and see what it was before it came out. And so his voice and what he says in this will largely set the tone. And then, of course, Chris Paul. Chris Paul has been through something like this before when he was in Los Angeles with Donald Sterling. The situation on that was different in numerous ways. This is not an apples-to-apples situation. But certainly, as the captain and veteran leader of this team, he's going to play a role here. And even Devin Booker, because some of the most of the allegations in this story are about things that were either not involved with players or happened before the current players were here. That is not the case with Devin Booker. There is a moment or two that Booker himself may have witnessed. And so I expect him to be asked about that after the game tonight. They will not speak before this game against Houston. They will speak about it after the game. But I can tell you, they've been preparing for this moment for a while. The Suns have been on a long homestand. They've been home, I think, for 12 days. During that whole time, they've been aware that this was coming. And maybe they didn't know what was in it, but they certainly knew that they were going to have to set the tone and make a statement that was going to be tied to them. And so whatever they say, you know that it was not something that they didn't have a long time to think out.
Ken Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to ESPN NBA insider Brian Windhorst. Brian, I think the next person that people would like to hear from after this is going to be Adam Silver and the league. How soon do you think we can expect to hear from them? And was this something that they were bracing for as well?
Yes. I mean, the Suns, again, the Suns issued those statements on a Friday afternoon about 2 weeks ago, and they were so – I can't remember ever seeing statements that were so strong about something that hadn't come out yet. You know, there's preemptive stuff that happens in crisis communication, but these were very strong. They were attacking the reporter. They were claiming that they had documentation. So obviously when that happens, the league is going to be braced and involved. But, you know, one of the things I will tell you is that, you know, Baxter Holmes, in this reporting, he kept this very quiet. People did not know what was in this story. As I was around the Suns for days waiting for this story to come, they were asking me, please tell me what's in it. I had general managers of other teams saying, what is in this? We want to prepare our team for this. Because of what we've seen in the NBA over the last decade, where we've had instances with owners that, you know, frankly, two owners have had to sell their teams because of situations not exactly like this, but similar to this, teams are bracing. Teams are bracing for other things to happen. And so all of that has to be digested, and that includes the league office. The league office has to digest what Baxter reported, and my guess would be that they would want to take a closer look for themselves.
Wendy, last one for me. One of the damning comments about Robert Sarver came from Suns co-owner about his behavior. And I'm just wondering, where are the Suns' leadership? Where is that going to be headed in the midst of this crisis right now? Because it doesn't seem like all of the ownership is on the same page when it comes to how to handle Robert Sarver and the fallout from this story.
Well, it's very common for limited owners to disagree and have a problem with the controlling owner. That is rampant throughout professional sports, including the NBA. But at the end of the day, the owner has the power, and the collective owners, the 30 governors, as they're called, have the power. And so really the only thing that would force change probably would be some sort of public pressure. And so that's why the next 24 to 48 hours are going to be interesting. In the situation that happened with Donald Sterling, there was an incredible pushback amongst the voices of the league, people like LeBron James coming out and saying he has no place in the NBA and things of this nature. How the players and the stakeholders and the people who have influence react to this, how the public here in Phoenix, how the sponsors of the Suns react to this, will probably dictate what happens next. Is there a public pressure campaign? Is it because it's a he said situation where we have people saying things and Sarver denying it? Will that cause there to be more caution moving forward? These are the things that we're not going to know. And I got to say, when I saw this story, which I saw really just a couple of hours before it published, my takeaway from it was, I don't know what the reaction is going to be. I don't know how strongly the other NBA players are going to push back. I don't know how strongly the businesses are going to be pushing back. I'm standing outside the Suns Arena right now. There's one local television station that is here alongside us. There is no protesters. There is nothing. So, in the immediate, there hasn't been the wave that I thought was possible. So we'll have to just see in the coming hours whether anything like that picks up. And I think that's really going to dictate how this goes.
Brian, we appreciate you giving us some time and some insight in the midst of all this. Thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care, guys.
Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Chris, we know right, wrong, or indifferent, what he mentioned there at the end usually ends up dictating these decisions. We would like to believe that the NBA would look at this, would see the patterns of behavior, investigate it, and if they found enough on their own, go and act and remove this person from that ecosystem. But we also know what governs most of the decisions made in all of these levels. It's dollars and cents amongst the 30 powerful people that are in the midst of all this decision-making, and the only thing that moves that is how upset is the outside world, and is it upset enough to take money away from the system?
And I think the governor for how upset the outside world is going to be the commentary that comes from Monty Williams, like Wendy suggested. Like, what he says and what the players say after their game tonight is ultimately going to determine how outraged the public is, because if the players present that front, that it's that upsetting to them what took place and the information, the insights that they provide is something that the public is uncomfortable with, then I think you can see that outrage get to a level where it feels like, we might be on the verge of the NBA being forced to do something when it comes to ownership with the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, we know this tends to be a league in a lot of ways that is led by the player voice on a number of issues here. This is also a spot, though, where I think it's important to hear from Adam Silver very soon. When you talk about the leadership, he gets a lot of credit for being out in front of so many things here. And this is an issue time and time again in sports where something happens in these front offices at these high levels and buildings that the Wendy pointed out, for most players, has nothing to do with them and is something they don't get to see as directly on a daily basis here, but now are going to be asked to answer for in a way that we see time and time again, in a way that I don't always think is fair to that group of people. But as we always say, fair is a place where they judge pigs. This is how this tends to work, and yeah, this is what we likely are going to be looking for in the next 24 hours, like Wendy said. Lots more to get to on this front. We will keep you up to date on all this information as we go along in the show, as it pertains to Robert Sarver and the report from Baxter Holmes about 17 years of his tenure being marred by racism, misogyny, and accusations of the like. We will get to more of that and get you updated on the rest of what's going on around the world of sports next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Odell Beckham Jr. also isn't the fault of all the problems with the Cleveland Browns offense, but Odell Beckham Sr., his father, takes to Instagram and posts an 11-minute video showing all the instances where Odell Beckham Jr. was open this season and Baker Mayfield did not get him the football. Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And let's make it twice here now. 2 days in a row, we have come into this radio show with the news that Odell Beckham Jr., now what feels like trending towards soon-to-be former Browns wide receiver, but he is currently still on the team, excused for practice for a second straight day, Chris. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless here. According to sources, Browns coach Kevin Stefanski addressed the team before Wednesday's practice and informed players that Beckham would no longer be a Brown as the team prepares for Sunday's game against the Cincinnati Bengals. So if it ain't over officially, boy, spiritually, it feels like this thing is dead and done.
It does, and to make matters worse, Gojo, I mean, when you have players that are on the team saying that the majority of the locker room would love to have him in the building, like John Johnson, free safety for the Cleveland Browns, did today, that creates a problem in terms of the dynamic between Baker Mayfield, the rest of the locker room, and, of course, Odell Beckham Jr. I don't know how this organization can move forward with Baker and OBJ coexisting. I just don't think that's even possible at this point. I think this is a matter of finding the best way to sever ties with Odell and trying to empower Baker Mayfield, a guy that Cleveland seems pretty intent on making their future franchise quarterback. Remember, we got the report a couple of weeks ago that the organization still had a long-term contract offer on the table for Baker Mayfield, paying him somewhere in the mid to high 30s. So Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski seem sold at the right price that Baker Mayfield is their guy moving forward, but it doesn't necessarily feel like their number one wide receiver right now, and Odell Beckham Jr. feels the same way. So, again, help me figure out, is there a way where both of these guys can come back and repair the relationship and coexist? Because right now, I don't see a path toward doing that.
I don't. I think the John Johnson quote, to me, and you can tell me if I'm wrong on this, Chris, I just took that as, listen, if the guy came back, we would accept him back despite what's happened here. And even Baker Mayfield has said as much about being able to put his ego aside if these things were to come up here. This just seems like CYA and let's get through this from everyone involved, because I got to imagine if you're this Browns team that's been in the midst of kind of a slide right now, dealing with a banged up quarterback here, you're probably also going to be sick about answering questions about Instagram posts from your wide receiver's dad here pretty soon.
Here's what I will say about that. The comment from John Johnson was completely unnecessary, given that it followed the commentary from Kevin Stefanski that said that OBJ was not going to be a part of the team moving forward. So when you go on the record and you say that, you know, we would welcome him back with open arms, that's him saying that the majority of the guys in this locker room have OBJ's back, and whatever gripe that he has with Baker Mayfield or the passing game or not being included in the game plan has some validity, which then again undermines your quarterback and his leadership ability with your franchise, which is why the Cleveland Browns have a serious problem. And again, I don't know how you fix the problem unless you cut out the cancer that seems like it's OBJ. Like, I'm not saying that Baker Mayfield is without fault in all of this and that he shouldn't play better, but we've also seen that Baker Mayfield is capable of carrying this team where they want to go, to the playoffs, and then being able to win playoff games. We saw that last year, test case on the road against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he was able to get that done. And he had the defending AFC champion Kansas City Chiefs on the ropes in Arrowhead late in that game. So I mean, if Cleveland has already made the choice that Baker is going to be their guy, then I think they have to support that choice with the subsequent move of releasing Odell Beckham Jr. And right now, I think Cleveland's front office and OBJ's representatives are huddled up just to figure out the best way to do that. I'm pretty sure that the Browns want to try to claw back some of that money, because they're not going to grant OBJ his outright release and then pay him $8 million to go play for a competitor for Cleveland and for a playoff spot in this year's AFC. So I think that's really what we're waiting on in terms of the Browns making this thing official. But the coach's comments yesterday pretty much make it official that they're not moving forward with Odell Beckham.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And Chris, because everything is a relationship analogy here, this divorce may not be final, but we're just waiting to sign the papers right now.
Yeah, they already got the separation agreement. Now we're just waiting for the divorce to go final.
We've been sleeping in separate beds for a little bit. Now you're going to stay with your parents. Like, this has gotten out of hand. And you're right. It's been a situation where just looking at the production that you've gotten from one versus the other, it is not to say that Baker Mayfield has ever been as good at his position as what Odell Beckham was at the prime of his. But the Browns haven't gotten prime Odell Beckham Jr. They've barely gotten what they've paid for in a lot of this. And on the other side, you've got a player who plays the most important position in football at a spot that has been the dire need in your organization. I've never thought Baker was the perfect answer, but I thought he was a perfectly good answer for what Kevin Stefanski's Browns team wanted to be right now. And you can't go forward with something detracting from that when it finally seems like your team's got positive momentum. Now, speaking of detracting, Robert Griffin III, our ESPN football analyst, was on Get Up this morning and said this entire situation and the way the Browns are handling it is going to have a definite negative effect on OBJ and his legacy.
Odell Beckham, he's not hurting this Cleveland Browns team, but they are hurting him. They're hurting his legacy, his reputation. I mean, people out there disrespecting him, saying he can't play anymore, he can't catch it just because of some of the injuries that he's had and some of the drops. But when you look at Odell Beckham Jr., him and Baker can't even make cereal together, all right? Because they can't decide what milk to use. Is it 2% whole milk? Maybe we use a little goat milk, or maybe we'll just go with kefir. And when I look at Odell, you watch the tape, it tells a different story. He is getting open, but him and Baker aren't on the same page. And it's also this offensive scheme. This scheme is not built to have a primary receiver. And Odell Beckham is that guy. When you pay him that much money, he has to be the guy you're trying to get the ball to four or five times in the first 15 plays. And that's just not what they're doing with him.
Bro, what kind of milk is RG3 drinking?
Yeah, I don't know how 2% milk caught a stray in all of this. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, mind your business, all right? Yeah. What did 2% ever do for you but provide great cereal joy for a lot of us? How dare you?
Exactly. But, I mean, here's the thing. That is the question of whether or not OBJ can get back to the level that we saw him at when he was wearing a Giants uniform. I mean, we haven't seen that version of him show up in Cleveland. And it's interesting because one of the comments that he made when he was traded to the Cleveland Browns is that Dave Gettleman traded him there for his career to die. And essentially, that's what we've seen his production do. And so people are questioning whether or not Odell Beckham Jr. is worth the salary that he's being paid by the Cleveland Browns, which is $15 million over the course of the next two seasons. Is he worth it? And a lot of teams at the trade deadline determined that he wasn't worth that number. That's why the Cleveland Browns couldn't find a partner to do the dance with him. But ultimately, what this is going to be about is how the two move forward and go ahead and finalize this divorce. And I think that it's a situation now, if Odell Beckham Jr. wants to play football for another team, he's going to have to make some concessions in the way of his contract and the pay that the Cleveland Browns are responsible for. Otherwise, he's not going to be able to escape from the lake. It's not going to happen.
So Odell Beckham Jr. excused from a second straight day of practice in Cleveland. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. We can get to plenty more on that. But coming up next, someone else will not be taking the field for their team this weekend. Aaron Rodgers in the COVID protocol for the Green Bay Packers. The forgotten player that now takes center stage in the middle of all this drama. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program. Now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, we know Aaron Rodgers not going to be on the field for the Green Bay Packers. We went through everything with Aaron yesterday about him now being positive for COVID-19, missing this game, his vaccination status that we thought was up for question, now firmly in the unvaccinated department, despite him trying to implore the NFL before the season. And all this leads to the part of this we didn't really talk about yesterday. Now Jordan Love's getting an opportunity this weekend against the Kansas City Chiefs team that you have watched me try to quit on this show time and time again. And Chris, watching the line move for this game has got me a little nervous right now, because you said this started the week as a pick 'em. Where are we at right now in the Kansas City Chiefs being favored in this game?
I think the Chiefs are laying 7.5 points. So that's crazy to think that Aaron Rodgers is worth over a touchdown when it comes to this head-to-head matchup. But it's just, it's one of those things, man. It's an opportunity for Jordan Love, who all of a sudden becomes somebody that everybody is rooting for just because of Aaron Rodgers and the audacity that he had with misleading the media when it came to his vaccination status. So Aaron went from being somebody that we felt was done wrong by the Green Bay Packers front office in terms of not roping him in the decision to draft Jordan Love, how they mistreated other Green Bay Packers players on the way out of the door. Like, Aaron was a sympathetic figure this offseason, and now all of a sudden that's kind of turned on its head, and he's being vilified, and rightfully so, because it was wrong of what he did. But certainly within all of this is an opportunity for Jordan Love to prove what he can do in this league in a meaningful game. And all of a sudden now all of America is kind of rooting for Jordan Love to see if the kid can actually go out there and play well. So it's just interesting to see how that dynamic shifted. But within all of this is an opportunity for the backup quarterback to step up and show why the Packers organization made him a first-round pick a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Chris, and depending on how you look at this, how the pressure stacks up in this situation. Like, how much pressure do you think is on Jordan Love? He's the second quarterback in NFL history to make his first career start with the team riding a streak of 7-plus games won going into this. They had the big win against Arizona last week here, so this team feels like, to me, you could spin that as, man, there's a lot of pressure to keep this up. I look at this and say, all right, Green Bay's in a pretty good spot so far this season. Losing one game without their quarterback wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing in the world, and I don't know how much he's going to be asked to do in this game.
Yeah, I don't think there's any pressure on Jordan Love, as crazy as it sounds, for his first NFL start, because guess what? If the Green Bay Packers go out there and they lose to the Kansas City Chiefs, the story won't be Jordan Love didn't play well. The story would be Aaron Rodgers let his team down by not doing everything he could to be available. But if Jordan Love goes out there and plays well and he lights it up, then everybody's talking about maybe Green Bay has the potential to move on from Aaron Rodgers this offseason. Maybe they aren't as desperate to repair the relationship that they have with the quarterback from this past offseason. So I don't know that this could be a better landing spot for Jordan Love to get his first NFL start. I don't think there's any pressure on him at all. Now, in terms of where this team is at, there's pressure on this group to go out there and try to win a football game just because they're in contention in the NFC, and we both acknowledge that that's the stronger of the two conferences this year. And the Green Bay Packers are in position to fight for that number one seed, and we recognize that the aspirations that this team has with Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback is to try to compete for a championship. It's always better to be one of those teams that has the bye, and that's going to be one of four teams in the NFC that can make it to the Super Bowl rather than being one of seven. So, I think that's where the pressure falls on Matt LaFleur and the supporting cast for the Green Bay Packers. But I don't think there's a whole lot of pressure on Jordan Love going into this matchup, which is crazy to think.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, the Packers are probably in an honest moment hoping that he has like a Matt Flynn-level game where he goes out and just bulldozes the competition. I don't think that's going to be likely to happen considering what Green Bay's offense has been this season. And they could be getting a huge boost to this. Now, 30% of their passes this year have traveled at or behind the line of scrimmage. That's the second highest rate in the NFL. So they've kept this thing short. And what we still don't know, Chris, hanging in the balance, for a team that ran all over the Arizona Cardinals and is about to face a defense that is going to give it up at an even higher rate than that when it comes to run defense for the Kansas City Chiefs, we still haven't heard yet one way or another on David Bakhtiari, the all-pro left tackle for Green Bay, who's been out most of the season, who sounded like he was trending towards being close to playing against the Cardinals the other week. If you get him back to solidify that line of scrimmage, that is nightmare fuel for a now favored Kansas City team.
No question about it. I mean, that would be Kansas City's worst nightmare if that offense is getting whole. Now, what it sounds like is they're going to have Davante Adams back. I mean, he was back today at practice on Thursday, so we'll see what happens with the rest of that receiving core. But having Jordan Love with as many weapons as he possibly can is only going to help in terms of their prospects of being able to pull off what would be a huge upset win this week in week 9 of the NFL slate.
You know what I'm going to do, Chris? I'm going to stick to my guns. You tried to tell me to quit the Kansas City Chiefs, so I'm going to pick the Packers going into this week.
Hello!
I'm already sitting it down here now. Am I maybe trying to reverse psychology of the Kansas City Chiefs here? Who's to say? But I'm going to stick with Green Bay for right now. Coming up next, if the Cleveland Browns aren't going to stick with Odell Beckham Jr., what are the options in Cleveland?